The San Jose Sharks Audio Network is on 24 hours a day. Whether you're in the office or on the go, make sure that you download the Sharks SAP Center app and hit listen anytime. You can also find us on your computer by going to sjsharks.com/listen. If it's a game broadcast, breaking news, or a player feature, the place to find it is right here on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
Eklund with a shot. He scores! William Eklund caps an astounding comeback. The Sharks win it!
You're listening to the San Jose Sharks Morning Tide. Morning Tide.
Tyler Toffoli on a brilliant feed from William Eklund. Macklin Severini, his first National Hockey League hat trick. Smith shoots. Score! Will Smith just tied the game!
Now, here's your host, Ted Ramey.
But Liljegren and Ferraro are still out there. Edmonton throws it to the net, and they score! Zach Hyman getting the pass and putting it past Askarov. And just like last year, when Edmonton tied it late and won it in overtime early, they do it again here, but this time in more dramatic fashion. Coming back from a 3-0 deficit, and Zach Hyman gets the game winner at 1 minute and 6 seconds of sudden death. This is a tough one to take for the Sharks. Final score, Oilers 4 and the Sharks 3.
Yeah, we wanted to try to shut down McDavid and Dreisaitl, and those guys have done a pretty good job all night. So, again, we get the puck, and we get what we want, and then we turn it over.
All right, what's happening, everyone? It is Friday, January 30th. We are waking up losers as the San Jose Sharks were not able to hold on to a 3-0 lead in Edmonton. A great start, but a very, very incomplete finish. And I will start off by saying, I love when the Sharks get off to a hot start. Always love a game like that. But the fact that those goals happened the way they did, I feel like it set the stage for San Jose to be trying to replicate that for the rest of the game, as opposed to relying on puck possession, setting up their offense, making things happen. When you get goals off turnovers, when you get goals in transition, it's great. Don't get me wrong. I will take that any day of the week. But it seemed like for the rest of the game, San Jose was trying to hit that home run pass, get the goal in transition, which, again, I'm not going to complain about when it happens. I just felt it took them a little bit out of maybe what would have had more success throughout the game, because for the rest of the game, San Jose got caught in that non-puck possession game where they were not able to establish the zone, where they were not able to be the dominant offensive team that controlled puck possession, and instead they conceded that to Edmonton for the remainder of the game. And when they didn't add a fourth in the third period, I thought to myself, uh-oh, the Sharks are going to lose this game, because you know Edmonton is going to get one, and if Edmonton gets one, that tilts the ice in a real big hurry. And the San Jose Sharks are a good team right now. I have no doubt about it. The Edmonton Oilers are a dominant team when they need to turn it on. And I spoke with Jack Michaels about this the other day, about how the team is not particularly focused on the regular season compared to where they need to be. But I think Edmonton absorbed what San Jose brought to them, and then they know how to flip the switch and beat a young up-and-coming team like the San Jose Sharks. Edmonton does not need San Jose to gain confidence against them if they have to face them in the playoffs. Let's be very, very clear about that. There is a very much challenger arising in the Pacific Division that is the San Jose Sharks, that has a young superstar in Macklin Celebrini, that has a 1-2 combo with Macklin Celebrini and Will Smith, that no, is not where Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid are as of yet, but the Sharks are trending in that direction. Edmonton does not need them to get any confidence, does not need them to gain anything. So I think that maybe against some other teams, Edmonton maybe packs it in down 3-0. Not against a team like the Sharks. The Sharks are coming up too hot, too strong, too potent, too confident, too breezy with their carelessness, in the sense of no one expects the Sharks to do anything if they get into the playoffs. There's no disappointment if they bow out in the first round. There is for Edmonton. There is for Colorado. There is for whoever the Sharks would potentially go up against in the first round. So there were a lot of factors at play last night, a lot of factors at play. And so that led us to Edmonton being able to fight their way back into the game. And so we take a look at the standings right now. If you had told me, by the way, that the Sharks are 1-1 through the first two games of this five-game roadie to take them into the break, I said, yep, that's exactly what I predicted. I didn't predict the Sharks would have their hearts broken by Edmonton. That's a little rough, but that is essentially what we expected. So the San Jose Sharks find themselves third in the wild card on the outside looking in. They have 58 points. They are one back of Anaheim for second in the wild card. They are two back of Utah for first in the wild card. If we look at the Pacific, they are one back of Seattle. They are six back of Edmonton, and they are six back of Vegas. Now, the other thing you take into account, San Jose has two games in hand on both Anaheim and Utah, a game in hand on Seattle, three games in hand on Edmonton, and one game in hand on Vegas. So the San Jose Sharks will now continue their road trip, as next up is going to be Calgary. That is a winnable game for San Jose, and that is the way that they have to look at it, in my opinion. And don't go back and think that, oh, just because you're on the road against a team that beat you already this year. No, the Sharks were able to bounce back and beat Calgary, and now they've got an opportunity to take two out of three if they beat them Saturday at the 1 o'clock start time, by the way, right here on the Sharks Audio Network, 12:30 pregame. But Calgary Saturday, then you look ahead on the schedule and you get into Monday. That is going to be Chicago, Connor Bedard versus Macklin Celebrini. You love to see it. And then Wednesday the 4th, 6 o'clock start time, they're at Colorado. So again, I keep on going back to my initial prediction. They should beat Vancouver, they should beat Calgary, and they should beat Chicago. On the other hand, they probably should lose to Edmonton, and they probably should lose to Colorado. That doesn't mean they can't defeat them, especially if the Sharks get the injection of Kiefer Sherwood into their lineup and have a good performance, but this is where we start have to be realistic of where the Sharks are and where the Sharks are not. Again, Calgary, Chicago, and Colorado. Even on the road, I feel like they should beat Calgary, I feel like they should beat Chicago, and I feel like Colorado is a scheduled loss. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think we all have to be very realistic about where the Sharks are in terms of their ascent. They are becoming a very good team in the National Hockey League. They are not capable yet of consistently taking down the great teams in the NHL unless they play a perfect game. Edmonton has been to two straight Stanley Cup finals for a reason. Colorado has a Stanley Cup in their back pocket, and they are the best team in the NHL up to this point of the season. Those are losses that you have to look at and say, it's not so much an indictment of what your team is not, but rather an affirmation of what the other team is, and that is a true contender. Now, could the Sharks somehow end up as a true contender this year? Of course. Anything is possible. I don't deny any of these things, but I have to be realistic, and I have to think about where this team was at the start of the year, what our expectations were, how fast any team can truly turn it around, and where these other teams were, how long it took them to become this way, and what you can realistically expect when they meet. Edmonton, if you go back to where they were back when it was Connor McDavid's second year in the league, that's a long time ago. That team that we talk about is not the same team that we talk about today. It took Edmonton a long time to even get to the Stanley Cup final. They've made it two consecutive years, and they've had two consecutive losses. Not that there's anything wrong with that. It's obviously not the ultimate goal, but it still took time. Even with the two greatest players in the world, arguably, on the same team, it still took time. Now, the San Jose Sharks have been very, very patient, very, very measured, and very, very controlled in their rebuild. The drafting of a Macklin Celebrini most certainly accelerated things, but they have not tried to change things overnight. They have not tried to turn themselves into a true contender too quickly. They have tried to add consistent and valuable talent to their roster, locking up guys to mid and shorter term deals to figure out where they are, where they've been, and where they are going. You look at them signing an Alex Wennberg. You look at them signing a William Eklund. You look at them bringing in a Tyler Toffoli. You look at the acquisition of Colin Graf, undrafted. You look at the way they've developed their young players. They have slowly developed Sam Dickinson into where now I feel he is a really, really good defenseman out there on the ice. People were impatient with his development at the start of the year, but now he is very, very much looking like an impact player, and it several times did during the game. Michael Mesa, now he's suddenly looking like a player who can change games in the NHL, and he's only played 15 games in his NHL career. And I don't think that we're watching Michael Mesa develop into anything other than a problem for the rest of the NHL. And so again, the way that the Sharks have built this, the way that they did not try to do too much too quickly, they brought Chernyshov up. They saw that he was a successful player. They also had a little bit of a roster bunch up, and they said, you know what? We've got enough depth right now. You can put him back at the AHL level, even if he's played over 10 games. They are not worried about winning the championship today. And I think that a lot of people start looking at a team like the Sharks and start getting ahead of themselves and thinking about where they should be or where they could be as opposed to where they actually are. And so that makes last night's loss all the more, I don't know, it's expected. It's a reality check. It's incredibly frustrating because it shows you the Sharks have the ability to tilt the ice and put everything in their favor. Up 3-0 in the first few minutes once again. I mean, that's what the Sharks had done in three consecutive games. You know, they showed the ability to just absolutely hammer their opposition. But in a way, as I alluded to earlier, it took them out of their game. They did not play enough possession-based hockey. They did not play enough of a style that would get Edmonton to defend, get them on their heels, tire them out. And the later and later you got into that game, as San Jose was not able to add on another goal, a fourth, you had the feeling that it would come right back. There were warning signs in that game against New York. Not that that wasn't an impressive victory, but New York had several moments where they did try to push their way back into the game. You could see them making the attempt. The Sharks are just a better team. Now, they were able to handle the game two nights ago in which they jumped all over Vancouver and took advantage of that game, but Vancouver is, again, towards the bottom of the league. That is not the same as playing Edmonton. And Edmonton, if you give them life, they will make you pay for it. And so this is one of those games that, you know, when we think about later in the season, you're going to be probably of the mind that it was one of those games that was indicative of where the Sharks truly are because you measure yourself against the best. They did enough to walk away with a point. I'm not happy with that point. Don't get me wrong. But the San Jose Sharks did not do enough to win. And you're trying to win these games. They just got a very, very harsh dose of reality of what the best teams in the NHL can do. Because like I said, I don't think Edmonton wanted to allow San Jose to get any sort of confidence against them, knowing that they could be a team they face in the first round of these playoffs. So frustrating. And you get into that second period, and even though the Sharks were up 3-0, you start to see the signs just because they got a little bit too defensive-minded. They got a little bit too much into the game of clearing the puck, playing it long, not trying to be able to establish their offensive zone, not getting enough shots on frame. And you saw the amount of shots that Edmonton was getting on frame early on. You knew it was not going to go well later on if they were able to get any sort of momentum. I mean, that's what's most telling to me is that everyone could see that game coming. You've watched Edmonton do that to a number of teams over the years. You've seen it happen. And so that's what Edmonton does. You have to be aware of it. You have to be ready for what they're able to do. Sharks only got 20 shots on goal. Edmonton was able to put up 32. When you got to the 6-on-5 situation after they had already scored one, you saw San Jose not being aggressive enough, and that was what was frustrating at the moment. And I was texting multiple people about this at the same time, and they were saying, oh, all San Jose can do is defend, to which I come back and say, I don't know that they really had a choice. And yes, obviously, you have to defend, but in the sense that Edmonton is so dominant in those situations that you don't have a chance or a choice to do anything but defend. They are such a talented team that a team like the Sharks, all they can do is hold on for dear life. Hold on, try and, you know, get an empty netter, which they weren't able to do. Late in the game, Zach Ostapchuk had that chance to clear. It didn't get out. I don't blame Zach. That's just Edmonton doing Edmonton things. But the Sharks were forced into that position because Edmonton is that talented. Hopefully the Sharks will be at that point one day, but they're not as of yet. And it's very much a reality check, a measuring stick, however you want to call it. That's where the Sharks are. That's where Edmonton is. And the two don't stack up evenly at this point. The momentum overall certainly shows the Sharks could be trending in that direction. The Sharks have a long way to go before they can have back-to-back Stanley Cup appearances in their back pocket, regardless of whether or not they've walked away with one Stanley Cup, two Stanley Cups, or none. But they are a team that is on the track of ascendancy in the NHL. And these losses, in a year that I do not consider them to be a true contender, in my opinion, pay dividends down the road when they are in those true contention moments to where they've been in these difficult situations, where they've lost, to where they have to learn lessons. This year, as much as it is about taking a step forward, it's also about the young core players of this team learning pertinent lessons about who they are, who they need to be, and how they're going to get there going forward. Now, we can talk about the 6-on-5 and them not being aggressive enough, but I know that the one that a lot of you really want to get into is the bringing out 2D to start off the overtime. I understand exactly what Ryan Warsofsky was trying to do, and to one sense, he's right. He said it worked until it didn't work. They turned the puck over, and then they turned it right back over and lost. And I get it. I totally get it. I understand where he's coming from. In my mind, I'm not a big fan of when coaches go X's and O's over Jims and Joes. If they put their best out there, you should put your best out there. That is my feeling about it. That is just not an indictment of Ryan Warsofsky, because I understand exactly what he was trying to do and his statement of, you know, we did what we wanted to do until we turned it over. He's right. However, I am always of the mind that if you're going to go in that situation, if their best are out there, your best are out there. Or if you have a chance to have a greater level of talent than them, then put it out there. Again, it's a learning experience for all involved. I don't know if Ryan Warsofsky makes that decision again. Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. There have been several other times this year where people have taken umbrage with the people that Ryan Warsofsky has put out there to start overtime, and people have said, oh, I don't like that, and yet the Sharks walk away with a win. Believe me, I read the tweets. I check out the Reddit thread in real time. I see the real-time reactions. Ryan Warsofsky's decisions in overtime have been nearly flawless up to this year, so I have to give him the benefit of the doubt. I am just saying that for my own point of view, I don't like X's and O's over Jims and Joes. And I know that is a corny saying, but I'm also going to come up and defend Ryan Warsofsky, because the Sharks are remarkably good in these overtime games this year. You can't deny it. There is no argument to be made in the contrary, so he deserves the benefit of the doubt. It's just frustrating when all is said and done, and there's no better way to get over that frustration than to bounce back with a win on Saturday against Calgary when the Sharks have their next best opportunity to stack together another win. And if they win 3 out of 5 on these 5 games heading into the Olympic break, they will have done their job. If they only win 2 out of 5, then you can start to worry a little bit. But I do think that the Sharks' primary job going into this 5-game set was to beat the teams that you're better than: Vancouver, Calgary, Chicago. We knew Edmonton and Colorado were going to be very difficult games. The game against Edmonton proved exactly that. And I think that it's the way that you lost that's frustrating. But again, if you look ahead and told yourself they lose to Edmonton, I don't think anybody's too surprised by that outcome. Let's get into some of these highlights. San Jose once again came out flying against the Oilers.
Faceoff is dropped and we are underway in period number one. We're in Edmonton. Right now the puck inside the Oilers zone. Will Smith steals the puck away. Instead of turning to shoot the puck, he tried to drop it to Celebrini. Now Graf tips it back to Celebrini, who makes the play, goes through to Smith, to Graf, the shot, score! The Sharks score on the first rush up the ice, and Colin Graf, who made the defensive play, was in front of the net, gets the pass, and nails it to make it 1-0 San Jose just 26 seconds after the opening faceoff.
My favorite thing about Colin Graf, great call by Ruzzi there, by the way, but Colin Graf is always so calm. When he gets the puck in a great opportunity, he buries it. He's always so calm, his awareness, his vision. Colin Graf, the Sharks and their acquisition of him undrafted, is going to go down as one of the most important moments of this franchise's rebuild, because he continues to be a key factor for this team. If they win last night, let's say, everyone's pointing to that opening goal by Colin Graf, because that's an opportunistic play. You had pulled the defense so far hard to one side, nobody's covering Graf back door. And there's a lot of situations we've seen against the Sharks lately, guys miss the open net. Colin Graf did not. Colin Graf continues to have just a monster season. This is his first full year in the NHL. He has 15 goals and 15 assists. He has 30 points on the season. He's on pace for a 48-point season over the course of 82 games, but I think that his pace of scoring has obviously picked up. I'm not going to be surprised if he finishes mid-50s to low 60s. And for Colin Graf and his continued development, he's only going to get better, guys. He is still putting on size. He's turning into a power forward. His ability on the kill, his ability to be anywhere in the lineup, his instincts, his hockey IQ. Again, Mr. Right Place, Right Time. Colin Graf just continues to grow out there before our very eyes. He is a problem for the rest of the NHL. The Sharks were not done with their early onslaught. Adam Gaudette and the God Squad make it 2-0 for San Jose.
Neutral zone check there by Eklund. Lead pass, breakaway for Gaudette. Moving in, waits, deeks, score! What a play by Eklund! What a deke by Gaudette! Sharks 2 and the Oilers nothing. Only 1 minute and 35 seconds into the game.
Adam Gaudette continues to be lethal himself when he gets the opportunity. He has played 42 games this year. He has 12 goals. He has 7 assists. He has 19 points. Last year in Ottawa, through 81 games, he had 26 points, 19 goals, 7 assists. So he is on his way to having his best season recently. We have to go back to 2019 when he had 59 games played. He had 12 goals and 21 assists for a 33-point season. I think he's very much got a chance to beat that mark and have his best season as a professional. Obviously, Adam Gaudette, another one of those Swiss Army knives who can do just about anything on the ice for San Jose. But the Sharks are out flying, and they had Edmonton on their heels. The Sharks were not finished, by the way. We get later into the first period, past the halfway mark, 11:40 of the first, and then it's Michael Misa on the breakaway, assisted by Liljegren, and Sam Dickinson gets a fortunate bounce, but he forced the issue. That's exactly what the Sharks need to consistently do, and suddenly it's 3-0.
Waiters move it back into the Sharks' territory. Dickinson turning to the near boards, away from traffic, runs into the check, though, and it pops back behind the goal line, but there's Liljegren, the head man. This could be a chance. Misa with speed. Down the right wing. Moving in. Shooting it. Save. Rebound. Score! William Eklund right in front of the net. Misa and Eklund combining, and the Sharks lead 3-0.
That was obviously later credited to Michael Misa as it went off of a defender for Edmonton, but I always think it's interesting how both Ruzanowski and Randy Hahn saw it the exact same way. They both thought that William Eklund was there for the rebound, only to go to the replay and realize that it was Michael Misa getting credit for the goal by the way it bounced. And again, fortunate bounce for Michael Misa, but he forced the issue. But that just shows you those two guys see it exactly the same way. Great call by Ruzi there as the Sharks go up by the score of 3-0. But unfortunately, this is where I think you could see the first signs. And I came in talking about this, is the Sharks kept on trying to hit that home run pass. They kept on trying to play the stretch pass. They kept on trying to play, you know, just really quickly up the ice. And I understand. I just too often wanted to see them slow it down a little bit and set up their offense, because I felt at that point that if they didn't tire out Edmonton, if they could not add one or two more goals, then Edmonton was going to roar their way back into this game, because they've got the talent that they do, because they've got the experience that they do, because they have the overall mentality that they do. They are not going to let a 3-0 deficit to an up-and-coming team stop them. Second period, I can understand the argument of you're managing the game, but it all started to fall apart in the third period when they got stuck into the prevent defense mode, when they were in their own zone the entire third period, and it just felt like they were not able to generate any sort of momentum or control of the game. They were the reactive team. It was not going well. Edmonton gets on the board. It's suddenly a 3-1 game for San Jose. Leon Draisaitl with his 26th of the year, and San Jose has seen life breathed back into the Edmonton Oilers. We then go to the later stages of the third period. Empty net goal, first of two. Who else but Connor McDavid, assisted by Leon Draisaitl.
Nugent Hopkins to Draisaitl. Draisaitl had the screen set up but didn't shoot. Now on the top of the circle goes cross ice McDavid. He tried to put it off of Celebrini, though, and it's kept in by Bouchard. Draisaitl in front. Poke wide there in front of the net. Draisaitl again to McDavid. Shot. Score. Extra attacker goal for Connor McDavid to make it a 3-2 game. And now the tide could be turning as the Edmontonian crowd stands and cheers as one man. At 16:55 of the third period, McDavid is on the board for Edmonton. He has goals in three consecutive games, and the leading scorer in the NHL has 34 on the season. It is his 93rd point of the year.
I was watching the game at that point with my two kids and said to them, whoever scores next in this 3-1 game is going to win it. Edmonton scored 3-2, and so I said, oof, that felt like a gut punch. Let's see if the Sharks can hold on to the end. They did not.
Bouchard kept it in. Draisaitl got it to him. Now McDavid's in front. Now it's intercepted, and Ostapchuk couldn't clear. It's held in. Sent back to the point. Oilers. Bouchard, shot, score! 58.1 seconds remaining in the game, and the Oilers have come back from a 3-0 deficit. Evan Bouchard threw a screen, got it by Askarov, and it's all tied up.
This one's going OT. It does not end well for San Jose.
But Liljegren and Ferraro are still out there. Edmonton throws it to the net, and they score! Zach Hyman getting the pass and putting it past Askarov. And just like last year, when Edmonton tied it late and won it in overtime early, they do it again here, but this time in more dramatic fashion, coming back from a 3-0 deficit, and Zach Hyman gets the game winner at 1:06 of sudden death. This is a tough one to take for the Sharks. Final score, Oilers 4, and the Sharks 3.
A rough, rough, brutal loss for San Jose. The hope is that they take lessons, they learn, and they apply them to later games against this very, very good Edmonton team and every other top-tier team in the NHL. If we look ahead at the Sharks' schedule, they do have a lot coming to them. They are going to see Edmonton at the end of the month of February, so that's one that I'm going to be paying attention to. The next time these two teams face off, how does San Jose do? This time, it'll be on home ice. Let's get some post-game reaction. Head coach Ryan Warsowski, not the happiest camper after that one.
I think our 6-on-5 was obviously not good enough, and that's something we'll look at. There's moments in the third where we need to continue to make plays and push forward. We didn't do enough of that.
MJ said that you guys went in defense mode a little early there. Do you agree with that assessment?
I mean, they're the best offensive team in the world, so you got to defend the two best players in the world. So we did some good things. Some things we got to get better at.
One positive you guys may be able to take away is disciplined. Obviously, only one power play against, and you guys killed it off. How were you guys able to kind of stay focused and not, you know, get into any, you know, stick checking and things like that when reaching keeps skating?
Yeah, that was one of the keys tonight.
When you look at Askarov's game, I mean, first one gets deflected. How did you feel about his performance? It just looked like it was an onslaught there at the end, but overall, a good performance.
Yeah, it was good.
What did you see from Timothy there in the overtime?
Well, we turned it over, and then he gets pushed into our goalie. Exactly what you saw.
Ryan, this is a really good young up-and-coming team. I guess it's kind of similar to the Oilers were like a few years ago. But is this just the process of learning how to close out games like this? Is that something that, you know, you look back on and say, okay, this is something that we have to learn? We're going to have games where we're in total control on them.
Yeah, they'll be, for sure. You know, we look at 6-on-5, Ostapchuk, young player, Macklin, young player, Will, young player. You know, Dickey's out there, so we got some young guys in those situations against a firepower that they have over there. So it's a good learning moment. That's what we'll do. We'll dust ourselves off and move forward.
The 4-0 goal, did you get a clear explanation why they waved it off? And was there any thought of maybe challenging that for non-goals?
Yeah, I mean, no goal on the ice, so it's going to be tough to overturn. 3-0, didn't think it was the right decision at that time. If they call it a goal on the ice, it's probably a goal. But that's just the league, the way they're calling it right now.
What you see in the overtime, it's rare for you to start out two defenders. What was the thought there?
Yeah, we wanted to try to shut down McDavid and Dreisaitl, and those guys have done a pretty good job all night. So, again, we get the puck, and we get what we want, and then we turn it over.
Was the idea, once you get the puck there, to then get Macklin off the bench and maybe get him on some offense?
Yeah.
You guys have a quick start. What did you guys do right to start the game?
I thought we got on pucks, or forecheck, or pressure. Something that I thought we did a pretty good job of. Again, we had control of the game through the second period. Even the first goal we give up, the shot's going wide, hits early. So the bounces are going to happen. We got to move forward.
What did you think of that third line? Michael Misa was not afraid of the moment at all. He won a lot of face-ups against Drysdale too.
Yeah, he's been good. He's earning more and more ice time, that's for sure.
I feel like that line with Eklund and Gaudette has really found some chemistry quickly here, and they're starting to drive play on their own.
Yeah, for sure.
Colin said that he thought that you guys were pretty in control of the game until the 5-on-6. Is that kind of how you see it, and what could you guys have done better on the 5-on-6?
Yeah, that's how I see it, and there's some structure and things that we just got away from it. We gave away time and space. We went over it, but didn't execute it.
Is there a message to Tim, who I'm sure he feels bad about what happened in overtime, just a message that you tell him or that Luke tells him?
Yeah, we'll talk to him tomorrow. I mean, at the end of that type of game, there's a lot of emotion. There's a lot of passion and frustration and every feeling that a human goes through. And for me he's a pretty bright kid. I think he knows he made a mistake. So it is what it is. We've got to pick him up.
I thought the forward left the game in the second period. Are you just dealing with anything, or what happened there?
Yeah, it's an illness. We got a couple guys that are sick, so they grounded it out.
And let's hear a little bit from Tim Liljegren before we run out of time.
No, I don't think that had anything to do with it. I mean, Edmonton is a very good team. They've showed that the last several years. So it's not an easy game. I thought, as I said, we played good for 40 minutes. There's always going to be things you can do better. But I thought in the third we sat back too much and kind of let them take over the game.
So after they scored that one goal, why weren't you guys able to push back?
It's a good question. As I said, they're a good team. They gained momentum and came at us hard, and we didn't respond well enough. So we gotta learn from it, and we're gonna be in a lot of these games moving forward. So just gotta learn a lesson and move on.
learn the lesson, and move on. He's right. That's all they really can do at this point. They have to get right back at it Saturday at 1 right here on the Sharks Audio Network with San Jose in Calgary taking on the Flames. And then they go on to see Chicago and Colorado before they head into the break. We are all out of time. For the San Jose Sharks, I'm Ted Ramey signing off.
This podcast can be found on demand anytime on the Sharks Plus SAP Center app. All music by Yogi Yend.